Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Listen.
Welcome to NBC, IGN's Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Casey DeFreitas, and this week, the week of May 14th, I'm joined by Janet Garcia.
What's up?
Seth Macy.
Yellow.
And Tom Marks.
Hello.
This week, we're going to be talking about how 70% of our audience seems to have Joy-Con drift, which is an incredible statistic, Retro's canceled Zelda and Mario spinoffs, and a couple of other things, like how Tom and some other people have been playing the wonderful 101 on the Switch. But hey, before we get started, how's everyone doing today?
Doing good.
Cool. We're all slightly dead inside, but we're going to talk about Nintendo anyway.
I'm more excited about Nintendo than the rest of the world, to be fair. So
I am too, to be entirely honest. This is the highlight of my week. Thank you for doing this with me. Excited.
Yeah, glad to be here. I have three Switches around me, so I'm ready to go.
Three Switches?
Yeah, so it's my Switches. Boyfriend's, mine, and then the Animal Crossing one I ordered.
Perfect. Nice. I'm liking your background, by the way. It looks great.
Thank you. I bought something so people could think I live in a proper home and not just a spare room that I threw myself into to do my work. I think it works out. I got a lot of Nintendo stuff, so.
Nice.
Yeah, exciting.
Week, Tom put together an article, and the headline is, 3 years later, Joy-Con drift is still a huge problem. Now, before we get into the statistics of it all, Tom, what made you write this article?
Dude, I just got sick of it. Like, honestly, the spark, if you need to know the real backstory of it, was a conversation with our very own Mitchell Saltzman. We were talking about how, because he did our review for 104-101 Remastered, and about a week or two ago, we were talking about how he's still suffering from Joy-Con drift, and how that game is apparently, because of how much you do with like drawing glyphs and stuff, it's essentially unplayable with bad drift. And he, you know, and a lot of games are, but that's neither here nor there. And I was like, oh, you know, it's not so hard at least to just send him in and get him fixed. And he was like, well, you can't. And I was like, wait, what? And that made me look at the fact that not only is like all retail stock sold out, so you can't buy replacement controllers very easily right now, or at least for the correct price. You also can't send your controllers in to be repaired in most places because Nintendo, which I am not faulting them for, are following the like pandemic COVID-19 restrictions and have their repair centers shut down indefinitely until the situation is alleviated or whatever. We don't exactly know when they're going to be back open. And I think that's great. Like, I'm glad they're doing that because it's the right decision. It's a responsible decision, but also it leaves people in a position where it's like, wow, we've known about this issue for 3 years. Everyone's been having it. It hasn't been fixed. And now because of this current situation, the crisis, we're in a position where there's absolutely no solution for players beyond like home remedies that only sometimes work, maybe, right? Like, and I just kind of hit a breaking point. Like, I just was sort of like, this is insane that we're still dealing with this. Like, it wasn't, I don't know, I just got really, really frustrated and decided that we needed to be talking about it.
Yeah, it's super annoying. I first noticed mine when I was reviewing Octopath Traveler, actually. And that's a long, very long game. So I have this thing where I take the Joy-Con, I lay in bed, and I can just throw my arms wherever I want to. I don't know if anybody else does that. And then I was like, why is my guy going up? Don't do that, silly man. This was before, like, I think drift was a well-known issue. And then, you know, it's only gotten worse. I got the new, like the watermelon one, you know, like the pinkish and the neon green one. I was like, hell yeah, let's do this. What was I playing recently? Oh, I was playing Trials of Mana for review. What starts happening? Boom. The guys start walking off in the wrong direction. It's infuriating. And then somebody said, you know, well, you should just buy a pro controller. Well, yeah, obviously I have one of those, but I can't break the pro controller in half when I'm laying in bed and being lazy.
Yeah. And I first started noticing Joy-Con drift when I was reviewing Pokemon Sword and Shield. And specifically, I got especially angry because I was also recording the first 15 minutes of that game. And Janet remembers the story. And I got to the point where I'm fighting, I think I was fighting like Score Bunny versus Chespin, not Chespin, but Grookey. I don't remember. And I went to choose the move that was super effective against it, like a person who knows what they're doing is doing. And my Joy-Con drift activated. I went down and used like Growl or some move that no one would ever use. And I was just like, I can't use this footage now because I look like a moron. And I had to redo it was like the very end of the video. So I had to redo the whole 15 minutes. And I was just so mad. I was like, are you serious? I can't.
Same in using a stat-based move, you know?
Like, because Ember would have killed him, you know? So like,
yeah, but absolutely. Yeah,
but at that point,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, at that point, it was only happening very rarely, and just recently, it was just constant. So I had to get them replaced. But were you gonna say, Janet?
Yeah, I was just gonna add to that. I have also had a numerous drift off a couple of different Joy-Con. My original ones definitely have drifted. And then I got the Splatoon ones as well, the watermelon ones that Seth has. And those eventually got drift, so I borrowed some from work. I'm like, okay, I'm going to leverage this work privilege and get some Joy-Con. So I borrowed a work pair that, like, I think someone custom did them because they're, like, the gold ones. And those are now also suffering from drift as well. So, yeah, basically my solution has just been to continuously get new ones. And I got the Animal Crossing Switch that comes with its own Joy-Con, and I'm like, I guess I'll just use those now. But like, what's really disappointing too, I think, especially with these, you know, one of the fun things about the Switch is that you can customize the Joy-Con, switch them out, and no pun intended, and kind of get to make it a little bit more customizable to your taste. But it sucks knowing that like these gorgeous Animal Crossing Joy-Con I have, like, the more I use them, like, they're just eventually going to just die. And I've mentioned this before on Twitter, but, like, the Switch, as much as I love it, it's going to be the most painful console to retro collect for, because all the hardware is going to be destroyed because it's already really messed up. And that's super disappointing from a historical standpoint.
Yeah, it's fine as a gameplay mechanic in Breath of the Wild, but in real life, you don't want your equipment to, break.
Yeah, absolutely not.
And even like, I think that point about retro collecting, Janet, is so good, but also, like, I'm even worried more short term than that. Like, I'm worried about, like, 5 years from now, what my Switch is going to look like. Like, I genuinely don't know. I have one Joy-Con. I got kind of lucky. I have one Joy-Con that had drift. I sent it into Nintendo and it got repaired. And then probably 2 weeks later, it started drifting again.
Oh.
Which is a thing I hear is not totally uncommon, is drift coming back after a repair. I had a brief amount of drift on my Watermelon Joy-Con that then went away. So, like, it was, I got lucky there. But, like, I have a friend who both his pair of Joy-Con are drifting. And so he bought a new one, like a new set, like a month ago or something. And he said 3 weeks later with a brand new set, it drifted. And it's like, how are we still dealing with this? How is this still this kind of ubiquitous that every single one of us can go around in a circle and be like, oh yeah, this was my first experience with this, not just like only, but like first.
Yeah, it's so weird because Nintendo has such a reputation for like bulletproof hardware. Like,
yep.
You can, like,
oh, yeah.
I found this. My uncle used to do storage units, and he was like, "Oh, hey, look, you want this?" And I just cleaned the corrosion off the battery terminals and turned it on. I found one.
Is that Game Boy Color?
What's that?
That was a Game Boy Color.
Yeah, this is a Game Boy Pocket.
Ah.
Not a Game Boy Color. And I do have another Game Boy Pocket that I got to... What's that?
It's a pretty color.
Oh, thank you. It's green. It has a Pokemon Yellow in the back. But I got a blue one, too. Same story. I got it at Goodwill for $3. Threw a game in there. Frigged around with it a little bit. Boom. It came right on. My DS. Hadn't plugged it in for years. Plugged it in. Boom. Works.
It's not and a big then... retro pick, huh? You're like, you're just going through the whole pantheon.
My NES, dug it out of the mud, dusted it off, sprayed it down with a hose. Turned that baby right off.
And I've told this story before, but I dropped my Nintendo 64 down the stairs like at least twice, and it still works totally fine.
So. I love that you had the confidence to carry it down the stairs a second time. You're like, I'm going to use all the knowledge I gained from that first time, and it's going to be different.
Look, man, I was like 10 or 11, and I was taking it to a friend's house, and I was trying. You have to do it in one trip to prove
your
worth.
One trip is the best game I've ever played.
So, yeah. So I needed to have the 64, the games, and all of controllers and the power cord all in just my little 10-year-old arms. And that doesn't work out very well. But hey, at least it wasn't eggs, because that would have broke. So
that is true. That is a factual fact. I think something else too, I remember, like, I'm really glad, Tom, that you wrote this piece, because it's something, you know, we've talked about a lot in the office. And I remember you and I had a conversation about how the Joy-Con and the Switch in general, but specifically the Joy-Con, is like one of the most impressive pieces of technology from this generation, but also one of the worst pieces of technology from this generation. And it's wild how it can live in both of those worlds. But yeah, it's super unfortunate because it does smear what otherwise would be just a really impressive piece of hardware, because it just can't, like, it's not reliable enough to work all the time and for a long period of time.
I wanted to bring up this article, especially because IGN.com sometimes does polls, and this poll we put in was, have you experienced Joy-Con drift? And out of the more than 80,000 people who looked at this article, we got 22,000 votes. And to be totally honest, we can't be totally sure how many people repeatedly voted, but like, who would waste their time doing that over and over again? So we're going to assume we got around 20,000 unique votes on this based on the unique views that we got. And 70.5% of them said yes. Only 18% said no. 2.9% said no, but I have other issues, and 8% of them said that they don't have a Switch. And I'm not going to claim to be a pro at statistics. I actually skipped that college course and took formal logic instead. Highly recommend for anyone going to college right now. It's way easier and more fun. But from what I understand, a 20,000 testing group is more than enough to with a margin of error, and there should be only a 3% margin of error with this group. So
And it's worth pointing out at least that this is the group being people coming to IGN to read this article, right? So like that could be skewed by if you see a Joy-Con article, you're angry about it because you have drift, so you go into the article. We also did a Twitter poll asking how many people had Joy-Con drift that I think got a lot more votes, and that was, I think, 60-40. So what we can say is at least that, like, it's definitely over half by, like, a probably statistically significant portion, which is an absurd failure rate. Just insane failure rate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny that it's right around 50%, because you know what else had around a 50% failure rate? The Xbox 360 at a 54.2% failure rate. And that's compared to that generation, the PS3 only had 10.6% failure rate, and we only had 6.8%. So for Nintendo to jump from the 6.8% failure rate to, and granted, it's the controller, not a console, so it's not as annoying, to a 50% is just crazy. And and I also wanted to mention real quick, there is technically a way to fix the Joy-Con yourself, though I think it technically might void your warranty, but I don't have any Joy-Con within reachable distance of me, but if one of you guys do and want to display, there's like a rubber skirt on the Joy-Con. There you go, Shannon. So there's like a, if you look at the in the if you look in the joystick, if you like kind of like put under the round part, there's a skirt that goes into the ball that's into the controller. Like that part.
Yeah, people tend to mention that when you, because they're like, oh, it could just be, I forgot if they use a term for it, like what that problem is, but it's basically you just have to clean out that area.
Yeah.
Ah. And then, of course, there's also recalibration, which, like, I know, Casey, you contributed a lot to that wiki. It wouldn't be a show if we didn't mention wikis, but like the like troubleshooting, you know, the Nintendo Switch and the different like ways to go about it. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the kind of, to reiterate what Tom said too, like a lot of times, unfortunately, these problems also come back, whether you do it yourself or you send it to Nintendo, like. And that's why I kind of just have given up. I'm like, I'm just going to trade mine into GameStop and let them just try to deal with it. I mean, that's what you do. If you have broken stuff, just give it to GameStop. It's not immoral or anything. You just tell them it's broken and they'll like refurb. They'll give
you $5
better than a zero, than it wasting away in my drawer, because it's not going to work.
I heard if you wrap it in a towel, that'll fix it. Is that true?
Yeah, that's how you fix the 360. You wrapped it in a towel so it got all snugly and got real
you turn
high.
It upside down and you drop it. Oh, wait, that was the Apple Lisa. Deep cut.
That was a very deep cut.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing that frustrates me is that I, like, why do we have to have this whisper network of home remedies on how to fix this? Like, why hasn't this just been solved?
Just a wandering old woman will come whisper in your ear what your problem is and how to fix it.
That's very what Wikis basically is.
Oh, cool.
I did actually post in NVC chat forums on Facebook and ask how to fix it, and everyone recommended getting alcohol to do it. But fun fact, at the time I couldn't buy any alcohol because everyone had bought it because of COVID. So I tried using like a lens wipe, and it just wasn't the same. It was kind of like a dried out lens wipe, and it just it didn't fix it. Long story short, it didn't make it worse, but it didn't really do much of anything. So I wanted to talk about, we all experienced Joy-Con drift and some sort of mechanical failure. What other systems or controllers or video game peripherals have you also experienced a failure with?
Ooh, I went through three Xbox 360s. Red Ring, yeah, three of them.
Wow.
The first one was before it was a widespread issue. So basically when I called, they're like, your warranty's up, bro. You're out of luck. And like, just sadness. Overwhelming. My original Xbox that failed on me, but that's pretty much like, I still have my PlayStation 2, I still have my GameCube, they all work, which is amazing. But yeah, those 360s were by the third one, they're just like, send it in, we'll maybe in like 2 months we'll throw you a bone, get you another one.
I think I have told the story again before, but long story short, I also had a 360 Red Ring of Death problem, and it happened a week before Halo 3 was supposed to come out. So, that was upsetting. But I called, and I was on the phone for more than an hour with a chain of people who kept telling me that Florida wasn't a state until I got to the point where they just hung up on me. I'm not lying. I'm completely serious. This actually happened. Microsoft was just like, the state. And I was like, Florida. And they're like, no, the state. And it's like, I promise it's a state. I promise. And it was just so frustrating. And I was like, maybe it just is one person punking me, but then the next person did it too. So I was like, is it, I don't know, man. I was in the Twilight Zone for a very short period of time, but I did get a 360 back. But I also, my GameCube disc reader broke. My original GameCube, the original purple one. I remember that being kind of an issue. I mean, I knew a kid in high school who had a GameCube as a lunchbox that had been turned into a lunchbox because his disc reader also broke. Man, I've had
school, you mean?
I mean, he was pretty cool. His name is Chris, and he's a great dude. Still a great dude, I assume. I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Shout out to Chris.
Shout out to Chris. My original DS touchscreen also stopped working, but Nintendo customer service fixed it immediately for free, even though I was a week after my warranty. They're great. And I actually also go through PS4 controllers really fast.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what is up with PS4 controllers, but I'm on my third PS4. No, my fourth PS4 controller.
Wow.
And I've had it since Destiny 1 came out. I don't remember what year that was. What was it, like 2014 or 2015?
What goes wrong with them?
Yeah.
A variety of things. Either the trigger will start sticking, or the control stick will drift, or one of the buttons will get stuck, or it's just like something will be wrong with it. And it's not always the same thing, but it's definitely just because of use. And mine would always last significantly longer than, like, I lived with three dudes who all had PS4s, and their controllers would be worn through way faster than mine. And I don't know if it's because they were just harder on them, but it was definitely a wear and tear. Like, they would have a PS4 controller for like 4 months, and the rubber would wear through on the joysticks.
Yep.
Which that is why I didn't let them use my issue. PS4 controllers.
That was an issue with like launch PS4 controllers, right? Is that the sticks would completely wear down?
Yeah.
My thing, like, I'm trying to think of things I really had happen. I think probably everyone had the problem with the N64 controller stick getting loose after that, like, roundabout mini game in Mario Party. So there was that one that I had, but, like, I felt like that was a very specific sort of failure where it was caused by, like, we knew the cause of that. Also, I had an issue on a couple of my Wavebirds where the rubber came off of the left joystick but that was, like, literally, like, into the Wii era that happened, right? Like, that wasn't like a GameCube problem. Besides that, like, the little flap on my Wii that covered the GameCube ports broke. Like, like, it's not not many. I haven't had many. I've been lucky. I haven't had many console failures like that. I've never gone through a PS4 controller.
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky myself as well. Also, like, the Wavebird was such a good controller. Like, that thing was so much fun.
It still works.
Yeah, like, it's awesome. I bought one for my brother when I rebought him the GameCube, and I added that in there. I don't have that many actual issues. I don't mean to be that guy, but I take pretty good care of myself.
Be that guy.
And I don't know. I don't play, I guess, stuff that's super twitchy and intensive, right? Like, I'm just, like, going hard on this indie game. I haven't really had a lot of issues. I've been using my boyfriend's like PS3 hardware recently to play BioShock, spoilers for what I'm playing, and a lot of those controllers are kind of beat up. I'm not sure if that was because of how it was made or because how it was used, but like a lot of issues with the triggers where like maybe the R2 or the L2 is less responsive. Sometimes like it's partially torn off. I think the biggest issue I've ever had with consoles has to do with like certain hatches, and even on my current Switch, like where the cartridge goes in. On my launch Switch, it's a little bit like loose, and I think I might have had that too with maybe where you put like the memory card for the PSP, like the original PSP. Like those sometimes get a little bit loose, but most of the stuff has been pretty much durable. I think the Switch is actually one of my like worst consoles in terms of it like holding up, and I think it's because since it's like it's everything, it's at home, it's on the go. I'm like, but it's also falling apart. Like I have like chips in mine. And like the kickstand is fine, but any day now it'll just pop off. And I think that, you know, it's a learning process, I guess, because the thing is, like, the Switch is so much more, like, techie than, like, the GBA was, or, like, even the DS and the 3DS. Like, those are a lot more of, like, sturdy pieces of hardware, and this is kind of this weird in-between where you're constantly sliding on and sliding off these devices. So, yeah, not too many bad issues, but I count that more to luck than anything else.
So that was, we were just talking about Joy-Con failure rate, and just a reminder, out of 80,000 viewers of that article that Tom wrote about Joy-Con drift still being a thing, 22,000 of them said that they experienced Joy-Con drift. Well, not 22,000, but out of 22,000 votes, 70% of those 22,000 had Joy-Con drift, which is insane. And Nintendo, please fix the Joy-Con drift. Thanks.
I will end on the last note that this is all very much set out of love. Like, we just want these issues to be addressed with some sort of permanent thing. But B, we did reach out to Nintendo for comment on this article, and I asked them if they would respond to things like, how long are repair centers going to be closed? Like, what do people do in the meantime? Do you guys have any sort of long-term plan for this fix and for the drift? And they declined to comment. Which is understandable, yeah, given that, like, the Joy-Con drift is in the middle of two lawsuits. Like, I don't fault them for that. It is just, like, frustrating that they're still not saying anything.
Mm. Yeah, I think if they had, after the first model of Switch had come out, and then they had just figured out what was causing it to fail and fixed it and came out with, like, Joy-Con 2.0, that would have been awesome. But, hey, maybe we'll get one now. Who knows? Now, let's talk about, it's another disappointing topic, I'm sorry, let's be sad today. Retro's canceled Zelda and Mario spinoffs. So, Retro Studios was going to make two spinoff games, and I know a concept artist had put up arts with some of the concept art from these games, and it's gone now, we can't actually look at it. I mean, I'm sure you could find it somewhere, but I wasn't going to try and, you know, be illegal and do that. But there was going to be a Sheik game, like a spinoff with Sheik from The Legend of Zelda, and a Boo game. And they sounded awesome. Does someone want to read the descriptions, or should I go on?
Please, go on.
I'll go on. So the Sheik game is going to be an action JRPG set in a dark timeline of Ocarina. I can't talk today. Ocarina of Time. The last male Sheikah travels across a ruined Hyrule with the dark Gerudo tribe, gives birth to a new form of Ganon. That would have been so cool.
If guys, I read about it, here we go. Action JRPG set in the dark timeline of Ocarina of Time. That's all I needed to hear. There you go. Game of the year, game of the century. You got me hook, line, and sinker. And that'll never happen now. I just have to imagine it and start writing my fan fiction.
Yeah, again. Everyone go write some fanfics and send them to me. I will read them, and I will rate your fanfics on the next episode. I'm serious. I will do this. Email me your PG-13 fanfics. Okay?
Good. Yeah, that was a good caveat.
PG-13 only. All right.
I know you can get away with a lot with PG-13.
You can, but it's going to be better than our fanfics. I don't know. You guys remember fanfiction.net? That was a site that existed that probably would have had fanfics like these.
And then Sonic shows up.
But there was also going to be a Boo game seemingly designed for handheld consoles, and it may have been set around a Boo learning how to scare people. And that just sounds really cute and wholesome.
Yeah, that one's interesting too, because I can't exactly figure out how that would work, and that always excites me when a game doesn't immediately seem apparent as to what it's going to be. And then you're like, the geniuses behind this are going to, you know, cook up something delightful in their test kitchen and serve it to me hot and fresh. And that's also not ever going to happen. Man, did I drag that metaphor out. Holy cow.
No, you're fine.
I think it was a beautiful word picture that you just painted for all of us, and I appreciate it. I'm inclined to agree. Like, I don't know what that Boo game would be, but I would like to know. The first thing I thought of was, I think this was on the Wii U, like that Luigi's Mansion or like mini game thing where you're like one person's the goat. Like, I don't know if someone can remember this.
Nintendo Land.
Yes.
That was a great game.
Does someone want to describe it? Because I kind of forgot the details of that offhand.
It was basically like, it was that game had two of the first like asymmetrical multiplayer games where it's one versus four. which was Mario Chase, which I still maintain is the absolute best party game ever made, and no one has played it. The Luigi Mansion one, which I literally don't remember the name of because we just used to call it Spooky Ghosts. Do you want to play the Spooky Ghost game? The idea was that one person was a ghost and they could see everyone on their Wii U gamepad, and then everyone else was little Luigi's trying to find the ghost, and the ghost was invisible unless they were scaring, and it was great.
Yeah. Super underrated. Nintendo Land, so good.
Yeah, Nintendo Land.
I just want to point out, like, how does Tingle get spin-off games, but the Sheikah doesn't? Like, come on. We got freshly picked Tingle's Rosie Ruby Land. Why couldn't we get this super awesome action JRPG based on the Sheikah? What the hell?
This one was more time intensive than the, no shade to Tingle, but you know. I think the Sheik one obviously sounds more fleshed out, but like, the Boo game just sounds interesting. I think it's a cute idea. I like also the idea of Nintendo, like these games that are like with, I guess, like side characters, for lack of a better term. Like Captain Toad is like one of my favorite games in recent history.
So good.
And like, I think they get so creative when they go like kind of into the weeds with stuff that like you wouldn't really think about. And that's why like I love Luigi's Mansion so much, because it's a Luigi game, but it's not a platformer. And I like the creativity of that. So this kind of thing would have been cool. And I don't know, hopefully there's some funky stuff like this in the future.
All right. So let's take a moment to mourn the games that will never be. And I'm sorry that we had to tell you about it, but we had to get sad about it. So now you do too.
Rip.
And that was our moment of silence. Thanks, Seth. Let's get on to some small news, and let's just kind of skim by these. But Retro Studios has hired more VFX artists for Metroid Prime 4, we assume. There are three new artists. Adad Morales, who worked on Battlefield Hardline, Brian Eric, who was a VFX artist for Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and Nicholas Wilson, who worked on the Borderlands series. So some pretty high-profile games that these three artists have worked on, which is pretty cool, and also tells us that Prime 4 is still happening and maybe is still not super far.
Yeah.
By not super far, you mean not super far into development.
Development.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I think it is super far away still, is a safe bet.
Switch 2 launch title.
I think it'll still be Switch. I think it'll still be Switch, but yeah, I think this game is far away. It is cool to hear that, you know, they're still ramping up and they've still got people coming in, and it sounds like it's hard to judge based on past games, but at least they're hiring people who have a history of high fidelity games is cool to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool. What's not very cool is that the Tokyo Game Show has been canceled. You remember how last week I said every week we'd be talking about something that was canceled because of COVID-19? Here's this week's entry. Tokyo Game Show was scheduled to run from September 24th to the 27th, but it will be reshaped into an online event, and more info is expected later this month. Another big bummer.
Yeah.
That's really all I have to say about it. I'm very sad for this year. Can we just like go to sleep and wake up after this is all over? Because all my stuff has been canceled. I'm very upset.
Somebody, I can't remember who it was, suggested that we just like make 2021 like 2020 again, and just like pretend this year didn't happen, basically.
Let's just
like
redo it.
Just full mulligan.
I would be down for that. I'm like, can we just like all get paid the same, like both people covering and also people making stuff? Like none of us do anything but just keep the numbers the same and we all just come back 2021.
Uh-huh.
Let's do it. Can I stop aging too? Just like just for 1 year.
Well, we'll make it half the speed.
Half the speed. Okay, fine. I can accept that. All right. And some other news, which is kind of good news. I'd say it's good news. I mean, if it depends if you're a fan of farming, but Harvest Moon One World has been announced for the Nintendo Switch and is set to release this year. And it takes place in a world where fruits and vegetables no longer exist.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but everyone's probably having really terrible digestive issues in that world.
I was going to say, nothing but meat, carnivorous lifestyle.
So does that mean that like fruits and vegetables no longer exist and you're the hero who has figured out how to grow them, and so you must like repopulate the world? Is that going to be the
I think you're going to go around the world collecting fruits and vegetable seeds and making farms for people so that their digestive tract can once again be healthy.
I thought there was some Soylent Green situation going on.
Oh no. I guess like you can have like bone meal as fiber, right? Like, does that work? I don't know how that works. I'm not a dietitian. Don't talk to me.
Harvest Moon, one cannibal world.
But this is being developed with new engine and graphics, even though no screenshots have come out yet. So yeah, Harvest Moon One World is coming out this year. Supposedly, so is Rune Factory 5, but we haven't heard anything about that since the Direct, and I'm going to bring it up every time I can, because that game is going to be better than Harvest Moon One World. I'm saying it now. I have no idea.
Should I wait to play Rune Factory 5 and not play Rune Factory 4 right now and just wait for 5?
I mean, you could, but I'd be disappointed.
Okay. Well, I don't want to disappoint you, so I'll download it.
Yeah, don't make Casey choose like that.
It's hard. Also, in small news, Star Wars Episode 1 Racer was delayed the day before its release. It was scheduled to launch on the Switch on May 12th, but it was delayed due to work from home requirements on May 11th. We don't really know when that is coming out now. I'm sorry, Star Wars fans.
That's kind of weird, but okay. Because I think the last time I was in the office, Tom, you had like just heard about that for PC or something and were showing it to me, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. It had just come out on PC for GOG when you were there. Right. So yeah, it's not like it's hard to play this game right now. It's kind of my take on it. And it's sad, and it obviously sucks that more stuff is getting delayed because of work from home stuff, but like, it'll be out eventually. I can wait for an N64 game. There's enough coming out right now.
And I feel like this kind of game is the kind of game that's the most fun to play, you know, on the couch with your buddies in person. So maybe it's better that it's going to be delayed. Maybe to a time where I can sit on a couch with my buddy without breaking the law. But that's about it for the small news this week. Let's talk about games out this week, including Jet Lancer out on May 12th. It's $15. This one looks like the most interesting one on the list this month, this year, this week. Time is a construct. Tom, what do you feel about this game?
I feel strongly about this game. This is if anybody knows a game made by Vlambeer, or the people that made like Nuclear Throne, they made a game called Luftrausers, which is like this dogfighting 2D plane game. This is basically, and they know about it, like Vlambeer has supported this developer a little bit. This is basically like Luftrausers, where it's this 2D dogfighting game, but like anime is all hell. So it's like super, super stylish. It's got great like Neon Genesis Evangelion vibes. It's really, really fast. I've just been having a blast with this one. I highly recommend it to people. It's so super cool.
Well, should I play it if I hate my dad?
Well, maybe it doesn't get into that. They replaced like the very depressing themes of Neon Genesis, and they just like the stylistic craziness. Like, it's very, very rad. And there's a talking cat that is your engineer.
You said it was anime, so I already kind of
Yeah, it's a cool game. I will say I'm only like a couple of hours into it, so I can't give you like the full-on review-y recommendation, but like what I've played so far, I'm super, super into.
Also out this week is Hunt Down, out on the 12th for $20, and it's 80s inspired Contra style side scroller with co-op. Nice note. Have any of you been able to play it?
No, but now I want to.
All right. I've sold.
This has been getting pretty good reviews so far. I haven't played it yet, though.
Cool. Yeah, me neither. Also out is Super Mega Baseball 3, out on the 13th for $45, and it's an arcadey baseball series, and the IGN reviewer gave it an 8 out of 10, which is great. Yeah. And it says, Super Mega Baseball isn't as deep a simulation as MLB The Show, but doesn't have to be. It gets the fundamentals right and has taken meaningful steps forward, being a more complete baseball game. Cool. So if you like baseball, this might be for you. Also out this week is Iron because Fury is coming after Ion. Ion Fury, out on the 14th for $25. It's a retro style FPS similar to the original Duke Nukems. And I got a 7.5 out of 10, which is good. So this is telling me this came out on PC last year because it does not abide by our current no half points. Right. Tom, have you played it?
I played Iron Fury a while back, but I haven't played a ton of it. It's very, like, it's a very, very faithful sort of retro throwback. I know it's got some fans, but not a ton of others. But for anybody who loves those retro shooters, it's definitely one to pay attention to.
And last, we have Dungeon of the Endless out on the 15th for $16. And it's a well-loved dungeon exploring roguelike from 2014, also with co-op. And IGN gave it an 8.1. A 0.1?
Yeah, back when we had one of those people.
Right.
Well, that one from, that review was 6 years ago, so.
Oh my goodness. Switch, why are you getting games so late?
You know what's crazy? In 2014, when if I read about a game that was a roguelike, my first reaction would have been, what the hell is a roguelike? That is the least descriptive name for anything ever, and it still doesn't quite make sense.
You don't know the classic ASCII game Rogue?
Right, you know, like all the kids used to play. We used to talk about on the playground at recess, hey, did you play that classic ASCII game? Hell yeah, I did.
I think the first time I played a roguelike and knew it was roguelike was in 2014.
Oh, whoa.
Well, when did Binding of Isaac show up and make everyone pay attention to that genre?
I didn't like know that's what it was at that point. Yeah, I wasn't aware of the genre until 2014, I guess.
Binding of Isaac was 2011. So 2014 was probably like peak of that genre, like getting explored, right before everyone started getting sick of it, and then it started coming back.
Just call them Isaac Likes.
Isaac Likes. Sounds good. But this is the description of that. It says, no individual element of Dungeon of the Endless is especially complicated, but together they form a fiendish and unforgiving challenge. If you're willing to take that on, then it makes it more than worthwhile borrowing from several genres to create something that feels unique, as well as bursting with personality and smart choices. Sounds cool. And for only $16 and it's co-op, like, why not?
Yeah.
So then, those are all of the games out this week. We talked about Jet Lancer, Hunt Down, Super Mega Baseball 3, Ion Fury, and Dungeon of the Endless. So now let's talk about games that we're playing this week. Janet, you haven't been on in a long time.
That's true.
What are you playing?
Even though I haven't been here, I have been playing Animal Crossing, as everyone who has a Switch is basically playing Animal Crossing. I actually just started a new island. It's a non-time travel, non-cheating island. And it's a very different game when you're not cheating. I ran out of storage and I was humbled very quickly by time itself. So that was an interesting experience. But I've been having fun. I've been streaming that on my channel. I just started streaming again. So that's been cool. I've liked revisiting that game in that way. I've also been playing Ring Fit Adventure because I need to move because we are quarantined. My goal is to beat that game this year. And it is such a hard game to beat because it is so long. I think it's like, maybe I'm wrong on this, Casey. Is it like 20 worlds or something?
It's a lot. I haven't beaten it, so.
I forget how many. I mean, once again, that Google would come in handy, but I don't want to type on my loud-ass keyboard. So, yeah, it's really long. I'm playing also Picross S3 because I never finished that, and I want to play through those games before hitting the most recent one. And then soon to be Nintendo relevant, I started playing Bioshock for the first time ever.
Ooh.
I'm playing on PS3 because I didn't have PS Plus to download it for free on PS4. And this was the cheapest way to play it. So, yeah, that's been really cool. And then I'm also playing, non-Tendo. I'm playing Dreams on PS4. But as a first-time player of Bioshock, I think it totally holds up. Like, it's an amazing game. That's not news. But I feel like with the coming to Switch, this might be a lot of people's first time playing it. And I think it's definitely, like, worth jumping into. It doesn't really like age at all. It does a really amazing job at creating atmosphere. I think it has some of the best sound design I've experienced in a game because you don't know where any of the sound is coming from, which is usually a negative because like sound's an indicator of like spatial awareness. But in this case, it just adds to like the horror element because you have no idea where anything is. And it's terrifying. It's also a little bit scarier than I thought it would be. So I will say if you don't like the spooks, you can still play it, I think, because I'm also not that into the spooky spooks, but be prepared. Maybe have a friend with you or a liquid of your choice nearby. Whatever.
Some liquid courage.
Some liquid courage, be it whether it be water or a different drink that is a similar liquid. But yeah, it was kind of spooky. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's also a little bit harder than I thought it would be. Like the regular enemies are pretty simple, but like the big daddies are like kind of super strong, and I'm like, maybe not, but you can also change the difficulty at any time. So I dropped it down for my playthrough. I might put it back up because I feel like it's a little off of like how hard the like main enemy is and how like easy the other ones are. But I'm having a good time with it. It's been cool.
That's one of the first games I remember when I, because I played it at launch and didn't beat it, and then went back and played it for the, like, all the way through for the first time. I want to say early last year, late.
Oh, yeah. And you had a great article on that too, talking about like avoiding spoilers all this time.
Yeah, because I avoided the spoilers for that game the entire time. But yeah, that's a similar thing where like when I first played that game, it was one of the first games to ever make me respect an enemy in a shooter. Where it's like, you're not supposed to fight the big daddies the first time you see them. Like, you are just supposed to get the heck out of the way. And I don't think that I'd ever felt a game, like, so clearly make that point to me. And then eventually you get the skills to, like, fight them, and they're still really hard. But, like, man, those things are, like, genuine, scary threats. And it's so, so cool to see that.
I've had that experience in one other game. And it was Monster Hunter 3? Three Ultimate? I don't remember. But you fight a Kuropeko, which is one of your like basic like Puke Puke equivalent, and they throw a Devil Joe at you. And
I got that joke.
You can't do it. You just can't do it. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
I understand that reference. Again, it wouldn't be MSD.
So, what about you, Seth? What have you been
playing? Well, I've been playing Picross S4 because I never played a Picross game before, and Pear said that I should and that I would like it, and Pear was correct. And so I've been playing that. I've been trying to play Tales of Vesperia, but I've been a very busy boy. I was like redoing my living room floor. And then Nintendo, for the first time since October 23rd, I played PUBG, which is my horrible addiction, and I wish I hadn't played it because I got third place on my first game. That's right, 2 kills.
And now you're all back in. So close to the chicken dinner.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah. But no, I'm excited to have more time now. I can jump back. Oh my God. What is this big JRPG that's coming out for Switch? Why can't I think of it?
Xenoblade.
Oh my God. I'm going to play the hell out of that. I've decided I'm going
to
do it.
I would also like to play that.
Yeah. I'm very excited for it. I'm going to spend all my free time playing that big old JRPG.
How about you, Tom? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a little Jet Lancer. I finished the entirety of the Uncharted series, which I mentioned last time on the show. I've now finished it, but we're not going to talk about that. I've been playing a little bit of the Wonderful 101 remastered actually on PC instead of Switch because I got it on Steam, which I've been enjoying. I forgot how goofy that game is. It's so, so silly where you have like an anime announcer telling you the like history of the story or something while like somebody is freeze frame posing in the background, and they'll just like look at you and be like, what's taking so long, like while the announcer is talking. So there's like all these little fourth wall breaking moments like that I forgot about. That game is so stylish in such a cool way. So that's cool. I do want to, unless we want to dig into that a little more too, I do want to bring up, man, I've stopped playing Animal Crossing as much.
Me too.
I know.
I mean, I've stopped playing after I
the rocks are unhit. Like it's the type of thing where it's like I think once we go back to having a commute and I have time on the train, I'm going to be excited to pick that game back up in a casual way. But I've got every villager house in the position I want them to be in. I've built all 8 bridges you can build. I've built all 8 inclines you can build in the exact spots I want them. I've got my island to the point where now I just sort of need to fill it up with stuff and play casually, which is great. But like, I'm just sort of less motivated to do that while at home, I guess. And so I think I'm not like done with it forever. I don't think it's a bad game or anything. It's not like my opinion's shifted. It's just like, yeah, I'm ready for that to be my commute game rather than just like my play at home game.
Mm.
And the Wonderful 101 remastered review will be going up the same day as this episode. So if you're listening to it, it is available on IGN.com. And Tom, I know you mentioned before that it's great that it's even just available on the Switch because so many people didn't get to play it on the Wii U. And
yeah.
Well, what did Mitchell give it?
Mitchell gave it a 9. He really, okay. Really liked it.
For amazing.
Yes, 9 for amazing. It's worth pointing out because people get this distinction confused occasionally. We gave the original game a 7.4, but Mitchell was not the reviewer, right? So if Mitchell was reviewing this game back then, he probably would have given it a much higher score because he likes the game a lot, right? So these are different human beings with different opinions, and neither one is invalid or valid. But if you're wondering why it, like, huh?
I said, I don't understand.
Yeah. Continue. But like, so if you're wondering why the score like jumped, quote unquote, so much, that's it's because it's a different human being. But he really loves this game. He says essentially that it's extremely unintuitive and hard to learn, which they've done, they've addressed somewhat in the remaster, but not like enough really. But if you can learn it and you can kind of get through that learning curve, like it is really one of his favorite action games out there. And he, that is a man who knows his action games. Like he knows his
and
stuff.
And is really good at them.
Yeah. And is really good at them. So yeah, he really, really liked it. The question though is like, as a remaster, it doesn't do like a ton, right? Like it does a decent job, but it's not like that much crazier than just like a slightly tweaked port. But like, if it's for a Wii U game where no one really, probably not many people played it on Wii U, like is a port called a remaster with some basic tweaks and some higher resolution graphics? Like, is that enough basically? Like, I don't know. You kind of have to make your own call. If you're truth of the matter is this is the best way to play it. So if you're coming into it completely fresh, it's going to deliver on what the game is, but like, it's not like a remaster on the scale of some we've seen recently.
See, I mean, we're seeing now. I don't know why I said that. I was looking at the time. I tried to play Wonderful 101. I watched basically the opening of it, and I played the first part of the tutorial where you basically round up a bunch of school children and move them to the back of the train. It doesn't, it's not, that's not an evil thing. It's just, you're saving them. You got to play it to see it. But I noticed a little bit of pixelation on the main character's face, which I thought was kind of odd. But other than that, I thought it looked pretty good. But again, I don't think it really looked any better than it did on the Wii U. So I don't know. But I stopped playing because recently I've been dealing with like really bad like wrist arm pain just from working at a not great workstation. So I actually haven't been able to play video games almost at all. But I remember that you can play Slay the Spire with one hand. So I did that instead. And that's the only game I'm going to be able to play for the foreseeable future. So never talked about that game before.
Such a burden you've been that's been put on you.
I know. It's like, well, I guess I only game I can play is Slay the Spire. I also started trying to learn skateboarding because I don't need my hands for that. And if I fall on them, I mean, they're already broken anyway, so who cares? And I also ordered a DDR mat because I don't need my arms to play that either.
That's a solid investment.
Hell yeah.
And really quick, I want one word answers for this question block question, and we'll get into it after our one word answers. This one is from Tony Lunt, and he says, is it time to accept that the eShop Nintendo Online are what they are and won't be getting any significant improvements or overhauls? One word answers. Go. Janet.
No.
Seth.
Yes.
Tom.
Commit.
That's my word. Is an exasperated guy. Okay.
Now, let's extrapolate on that question. Is it time to accept that the eShop and Nintendo Online are what they are and won't be getting any significant improvements or overhauls? Thanks for the question, Tony Lentz. Seth, I see that you have thoughts.
Well, it just so happens before I read Tony's excellent question that I actually made a joke on Twitter about this very subject, about how, you know, remember a million years ago when you sign up for Nintendo Online, you're like, whoa, we got all these NES games you can play. And now we got Super NES games you can play. We're adding more every month. And it was super exciting because, you know, every month brought a whole new crop of retro goodness. And then it just stopped. And the last game that we got was that boat game that I make a joke about every episode that I'm on. That I can't remember the name of, but it's not a good game at all. And now we haven't gotten any new games and other, I don't even really know why I use it. I don't really play Splatoon 2 online, which is, I think, the only reason I would want to, I guess my kids do, but like, why am I, it's so cheap. Sure. That I don't even notice that there's like $20 missing, in my yearly budget.
Calm down, money bags.
Reminds me, I have to start, like, I'm going to have to start going to my friends and being like, hey, you know that $36 I pay for Nintendo Online? How about that share of yours? I mean, I don't do that. That's not, I have a very large family. but yeah, I don't think they will be getting any significant improvements or overhauls either. I mean, I don't trust Nintendo to figure that stuff out. Is that, am I being too negative? Am I being mean? Well, am I being mean to Nintendo to just like not trust them?
There's no incentive because like everybody loves Nintendo. You can't even get a Nintendo Switch or a Nintendo Lite right now because everyone is buying them because they love them. So what, you know, it's not like everyone's like, I need a Nintendo so I can go online. People are just I need a Nintendo so I can play these fun games. It's the least appealing part of their business model. It's great that they have it, but there's no financial incentive for them to do anything better. I mean, it's 20 bucks a year. You get a couple, you know, you get Eliminator Boat Duel. That's what it's called.
Really? Yeah. That sounds made up.
It does sound made up.
It's like a fun game. It sounds like a fun Nintendo game. I don't need online to play.
Right. I mean, it's great that I can play Link to the Past again for the millionth time and also the other Zelda games, which I love, which is nice and all, but it's like, I mean, come on, man. But still, the point I'm trying to make is there's no incentive. There's no financial incentive for, you know, everyone's fine. We all love Nintendo. We're all here on the podcast. We're here to share the love, but it's like, you know, they don't need to make it any better. And so I'll just pout about it.
But anyway, I did hear they made some improvements to the Super Smash Bros. Online connectivity, and that has been better, but I haven't tested it because I feel so burned from the first time that I tried it that I just haven't bothered. But maybe it has been improved. Maybe I should give it another shot when my hands allow me to. We'll see.
Well, you know, there's that saying, I mean, I think it has like some religious origins, but it's, you know, grant me the strength to change the things I can, accept the things I can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. But I disagree. I've decided I'm going to dig my heels into the ground on this one. Is it time to accept that the eShop and Nintendo Online are what they are and they won't be getting any better? I don't think it's ever time to accept that. I feel like if I were to accept it, I mean, I could, and we could just eliminate it as a topic of conversation. But I think as we continue to move forward, especially into next gen, and more of these companies are thinking of ways to create services and unique experiences and subscriptions, Nintendo just has to catch up eventually. And I know they'll never fully catch up because of how Nintendo is. But like, if they're not going to ever catch up, they still need to step up to some degree. And Nintendo has that problem in a couple different ways that they handle their business. So yeah, I don't think it's ever time to accept it in that regard. Do I think that they're ever going to fix it? I think they have to technically. I think it'll be so late that by the time it gets to where we want to be, we'll be on like Switch 3 or something, right? And we're like, oh my God, you can finally like invite friends to play games. But like, it's inevitable they have to improve because you just can't. I mean, what they get away with is ridiculous and unacceptable and just the reality. But yeah, I refuse to accept this situation. And I also refuse to stop being a fan of the service and the platform. So I have no choice but to continuously ask and want for it to be better. And it needs to get better.
I think to clarify, yes, I don't expect it to get better on the Switch, but yes, I do expect it to be overhauled and have significant improvements for the next Nintendo system. And I think it would be completely unacceptable if it didn't improve from this iteration in the next gen.
Yeah, I want to make it clear. My exasperated sigh was not at Tony himself or his question. It was at the fact that I know in 10 years we're still going to be having this conversation. Like I think Janet's right, and I think that the key difference here is that yeah, they're gonna get better, but I think it is time to give up on hope that there's going to be a Nintendo Direct one day that says we're fixing everything wrong with the Switch's online service. Here's all of these things that we're doing. Like I don't think that they're gonna do that sort of cataclysmic one step overhaul now. But I do hope that I will keep fighting for them to make it better. Mm-hmm. Iteratively.
We'll see. You hear us, Nintendo? I'm sorry we're complaining so much this week. I don't know what's going on. It's just the energy in the world is not great. But this next question is from Even Beetle. What is the longest amount of time you've gone without playing a video game? Why did you take a break?
I took a break in the Wii era. I don't know how long the break was, and I admittedly don't know like how long without playing any games, because I feel like games have always been somewhat a part of my life, but I skipped that gen almost entirely. Like I wasn't interested in the Wii. I also wasn't interested in just like kind of the way gaming was going. It felt like that was the era of like FPSs and like motion control and a lot of stuff that I just wasn't interested in. That was sort of that next wave. And it sort of felt like games, I don't want to say were no longer for me, but it was harder for me to find games that I found appealing and things to get excited about. Because if we think of like what Sony and Microsoft were putting out, it was a lot of, it felt kind of leaning into like that more FPS and kind of action-y stuff, which I do like some of that, but I'm also really heavy into platformers. And like, I love Nintendo, but I hated the Wii as a concept. I hated the fact that it was remote. I didn't want to use the motion controls. I wasn't interested in it. I never owned it. I know there's great games on there, but I'm never going to play them because I don't want to wave that little TV remote around. So then I kind of looked around and I felt like there wasn't really anything there for me to do. So that was probably like my biggest, what I would consider a gap. Now, did I not play any games in those years? I'm sure I did actually play like some games here and there from like older gens or handhelds and things. But that is the longest I had been out of touch with gaming.
I just want to say this. I feel slightly personally attacked by your attack on the Wii because for my 16th birthday, you know how here in America, they're like sweet 16s. Instead of having a sweet 16 party, I had my parents let me buy a Wii and a new TV to play the Wii on. So that was my sweet 16.
Did you spell it S-W-I-I-T 16?
What? Oh my gosh. I should have. But in real life, I didn't actually have a party, so I just had a Wii. I actually, I lied to my parents and had my grandma take me to GameStop to skip school so I could pre-order the Wii.
Oh, that's awesome.
As one does.
That's the coolest granny ever.
But yeah, so I spent my whole sweet 16 on a Wii, Janet, and you're just gonna bash it like that?
I mean, you didn't invite me to the Wii party, so maybe it could have been different if we could go back, right? But yeah, that would be like what I consider my lunch break. What about you guys? Like 3 hours.
I don't think I've had one really that stands out to me. Like I don't really keep track of that stuff. I definitely take breaks with games and kind of go here and there, but never something that felt like significant, I guess.
Yeah, I think
Jinx, you go ahead, Seth.
Well, I was gonna say there were definitely times where I just one day noticed, I was like, man, I haven't played a video game in forever. And I remember I sold my original I gave my Nintendo 64 to a guy that I owed rent to, and then I just didn't play games for a long time. But I can pinpoint like an 8 to 10 week span where I know I didn't play video games at all, and it's because I had a little stint in the lockup. No, I'm just kidding. It was when I was in basic training and then tech school for the Air Force. So
that's,
and we didn't have, you know, that was like so long ago that we didn't have, you know, smartphones and all these screens that you can.
That's a much more respectable reason than just hating the Wii. Now I feel I'm glad I led with my Wii story, because
that was two different kinds of wars right there.
Oh no!
No disrespect meant. I'm sorry.
I think my longest period of time going without playing a video game was probably 11 or 12, and I went to summer camp for 3 weeks, and we didn't have game systems there.
Hard when you're a kid.
I mean, it was summer camp, so I had plenty of other stuff to do, but also probably like when I was on the younger side where I would actually like go outside and hang out with the neighbors, but also we would go to each other's houses and play video games. So
back when that was allowed, yeah.
But yeah, back, I know, when that was allowed, right? Go outside, go to parks. There's not a padlock on them preventing you from going on the swing. But yeah, I haven't really gone very long time without playing a video game. I'd like even bring game systems on me with to vacation every time.
Like,
so
full consoles,
like I'll like Switch or like a 3DS, or like over Christmas break, actually I brought my PS4 with me to Florida so I could play Monster Hunter. So
we had a guy who built a custom enclosure for a CRT TV and a PS2 so he could put it on a plane when we deployed after 9/11. And it just looked like any other piece of military gear. He was a metal worker. He built this entire case. It looked like a military grade aircraft pallet. Slid it on there, got to his camp, plugged it in, and was playing PS2.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
That is the most hardcore thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
This was a hardcore dude. This guy
Yeah.
The situation was hardcore. The person was hardcore. The craftsmanship was hardcore. Like,
oh, it was beautiful. I mean, it looked like something in a movie, you know, like click it open and it's going to drop in for a CRT TV, a PlayStation 2 controller, and nothing would get jostled or shook around when it was offloaded by a 13K all-terrain forklift from a C-130.
That's awesome.
Taking hostile enemy fire. I don't know about that part.
All right, and for the last question for question block for this week, this one is from Guillermo Garcia. He says, what are your favorite modern tactics games that are not Fire Emblem or XCOM?
Rabbids.
Is it Guillermo?
Guillermo, like the
yeah, the Elder Silence. Okay, Guillermo.
But also, that's just speculation. But my favorite tactics is just Mario plus Rabbids because I'm basic, so... That's like a good tactics game for people that don't play tactics games.
I'm right there with you.
You want to get super deep into tactics, like really, you can check out Disgaea, this whole Disgaea series. There's a ton of them on the Switch right now.
I have the fifth one. I completely forgot I have that. Yeah, actually, that one's actually really fun and weird.
Yeah, they're really weird. They're really fun. The progression system is crazy. And there are so many different units you can use and so many different strategies you can use in battle and so many different things you can do. You can go into items to play an item dungeon to level up the item. There's a bunch of crazy stuff.
That's amazing.
And there's exploding penguins. I mean, yes. it's great.
Now I'm interested.
It's awesome. All right, what about you, Tom?
Mine are weird, I would say, because they're both collectible digital card games, actually. But the two of them are either Duelist for a time, and then the other one is called, which is still running, and I think it's actually, maybe just came out on Switch recently, it's called Faria. Duelist and Faria are these two different games that are like Hearthstone-style card games, but then when you play the unit, you're playing them onto the board, and then it is a tactics game from there. And it is both of those games just rule. Duelist has unfortunately died a sad death, but that for a time was my absolute favorite game for a little while. So yeah.
What was the first one again? Because that sounds like extremely my stuff.
Duelist. Well, yeah. they're similar. Duelist is dead and gone. Duelist was basically Final Fantasy Tactics mixed with Hearthstone. Faria is still around, and that one's a little bit more complex because it's like it's hex based, and when you not only on your turn are you playing cards, but you're also building the landscape of the battlefield. So you can like, it's an empty hex grid to start. And then every turn you can either place down two empty hexes or one like special one that's like a mountain, a forest, a desert. And then you can only like, if you have like a mountainy creature, you can only summon it onto a mountain space. And then it gets more complex from there. And you're trying to like get across the board to the enemy's hero basically and destroy it. And that game is really, really cool because you have to not only think about like normal card game stuff, but also like, okay, here's my curve for minions, but if I don't literally have a physical path to get those minions to the other side, like they literally can't do anything. That game, Faria, is great.
That sounds awesome. And with that is about all the time we have left for NVC, Nintendo Voice Chat. Remember, you can listen to us every Thursday at 3 p.m. on your favorite podcasting platform or youtube.com or IGN.com. And remember, you can always write into us with your own questions at NVC@IGN.com or answer our weekly question block post on our Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, this is the only place you can.
Get the thing.
Thanks, Janet.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.